Hello, Pedra Pearls listeners. It's me, Jen Dawson, Pedra's Associate Director of Educational Programs, and I am back with episode 2 of our Getting to Know Your Research show. Today, I am joined by Dr. Kristin Barebi. Dr. Barebi is a clinical assistant professor and director of pediatric dermatology at the University of Iowa. Thank you so much for joining us on Getting to Know Your Research, Dr. Barebi. It's so nice to have you back after hearing your beautiful voice on our Points of Discussion podcast last summer.
I feel so honored to be asked back and having a nice chat with you, Jen.
Wow. So I'm really excited to talk about your project. It was funded by a Pedra Research Grant back in 2020. And the title of the project is a multi-center retrospective cohort study on the utility of ancillary studies in the risk assessment and management of Spitz nevi, atypical Spitzoid tumors, and Spitzoid melanoma in the pediatric population. Now, for folks who listened to our Points of Discussion podcast, we touched a little bit on this work that you've been doing, but let's just start at the beginning. Unpack this title for us, Dr. Barebi.
Absolutely. Yes, it is definitely a lot to unpack and certainly a mouthful. So props to you for saying all of it. Well, what really prompted the study in the first place was, you know, I kept getting these referrals for kids with this diagnosis with either atypical Spitz tumor or Spitzoid melanoma, and they had had various ancillary studies or specific dermatopathologic stains that were done on their tissue. And I didn't know what to do with them. It's like, what does this even mean? You're giving me all of these things. And the parents are super nervous and worried about it, rightfully so, because, you know, look at all these things that it's positive for, you know, or negative for, or what have you. And what does it mean? And so so I went to some of my colleagues within my own department and other departments across the country and just said, like, what do I do with this information? And no one really had a good answer. And so that's where it all came from. And that's where it all started, because it was like, you know, I'm getting referred and I have a special interest in procedural pediatric dermatology. So I was being referred a lot of, you know, potentially complex surgical excisions for these. And I just wanted to know what to do with them. So that's how it all started.
It's a great place to start. I imagine the undertaking seemed probably overwhelming to begin with. So how did you actually begin or go about the process of beginning this study?
This is my first major foray into research. And so this was a big undertaking. And I don't think I knew quite how big of an undertaking it would be. And I remember talking with Elena Halwerk at Boston Children's, actually, because she did the melanoma, the fetal pediatric melanoma study previously. And she just said, oh, I'm so glad you're doing this, Kristin, you know, it's going to be great, you know. And on the flip side, she was like, yeah, this took, like, I can't remember how long she told me, like 5 years of her life or something, to, you know, do, or even longer. So embarking on the study was quite the undertaking. And I did have a couple of really interested and enthusiastic residents and medical students who their work cannot be discounted. They really helped to move the project forward and get things together. And so we decided to apply for one of the Pedra research grants. And I was the first, you know, honestly, the first grant, real grant that I've ever applied for. And we did it and got it together. And lo and behold, there it was. We got the grant so we could move forward with the study. And it was really one step at a time, kind of sitting down with our group of thinkers, trying to figure out what we were going to do in terms of what we're going to start with, where we wanted to end up, what we wanted to look at. And my philosophy was kind of like, oh, the more data, the better. Let's just get it all. And once we had all the data, it was a lot to process, but we're finally getting to the point where we're going to publish soon. So
very cool. Well, before we dive into some of those details, I want to go back to your point about medical students and the role that they can play in research, and especially on projects like yours. So can you talk a little bit about the work that you had them doing? How were they supporting this project?
Absolutely. So I got incredibly lucky, as we can do with so many wonderful medical students. But Elena Chen was one of our medical students here at the University of Iowa. She happened to previously have done an MPH, which is very helpful, Master's in Public Health. And so she really understood, you know, doing kind of population-based studies, which was super helpful. She knows way more than I do about that. And so it was kind of a perfect situation. The stars aligned, I guess, that she happened to be interested in pediatric dermatology. She approached me about any projects we might have, and she had been communicating with some of our residents. That's also an important role, is that the residents kind of keep an ear to the ground to figure out what medical students might be interested in helping out with research projects. And so she came to me. We had a research meeting. It was me and a couple residents that were involved, and then her as a medical student. She came with really great questions about what the goal of the study was and what we were kind of thinking or envisioning. And with the support of the residents, she was able to really, really take it and run with it, which is amazing, because I think having the resident intermediaries is a really important aspect of it, especially when you have so limited faculty pediatric dermatologists, and especially in the state of Iowa, I happen to be the only one. And so, you know, the residents really helped work with her so that they could impart some of their dermatologic knowledge, and then she could put that together with kind of the necessary steps that needed to be taken. So she was really wonderful at helping to kind of meet deadlines, like what are the next tasks that we need to complete to move this forward. I mean, I can't say enough good things about her involvement and how important she was to this paper coming together and all of the project. So
that's really cool. I really love how you really, it seems like you made a very conscious effort to include trainees in this process. And it sounds like the study wouldn't really have gotten off the ground had it not been for those folks. So what a great mentoring opportunity for you and a great experience for them to learn and through this process. So what I want to know is how much changed from start to finish? Like, what did you learn along the way? What kind of adjustments did you have to make, especially working with those trainees? And like, who brought that up? And who was like, Dr. Brebby, I think we asked the wrong question. Like,
yeah, right.
No, like, I'm always wondering, you know, it's not a straight line, is it?
No,
it is. Yeah, from point A to point B.
Oh my goodness. There were definitely roadblocks along the way that kind of cropped up. And even now that we've done the whole project, looking back, I'm like, oh man, I wish we would have asked that question. Or, you know, I mean, of course, research, as it were, you know, one question leads to another, which is how it should work, right? Now we have even more to explore. But yeah, navigating that is definitely challenging, especially with my first real experience in doing a research project. But recognizing that everybody is an important member of the team and really respecting everybody's role and everybody's viewpoints, medical student, resident, faculty, that's super important to a successful project. So I think that anytime concerns arose or more questions were asked, it was kind of troubleshooting and seeing who was going to be the best to kind of problem solve that aspect of things. And fortunately, I just had a really wonderful team.
I know you haven't published yet, but what can you share with us in terms of what you learned from this research project?
Yeah. So, I mean, one very good thing that came out of the data is that there were no deaths. There were no deaths, which was, you know, and we had a big cohort. I think our total number ended up being like around 400 atypical Spitz tumors and 38 Spitzoid melanomas, and no deaths, at least, you know, for the period that we studied. Obviously, these people are, well, many of them, because they were all diagnosed when they were under age 18. So many of them are still undergoing surveillance and things like that. But the really good outcome is that there were no deaths. There were no deaths reported. So that means whatever we have been doing as dermatologists has been good enough. Now we just need to hone in on what really needs to be done to make sure, you know, so that we're not taking too big of margins or we're not being overly aggressive about doing nodal biopsies or things. And another thing that I a very important conclusion is that sentinel node did not seem to be, it didn't seem to correlate with any worse outcome, you know. And so that's something that has been suggested in prior studies with spitzoid neoplasms in general, that you can have nodal positivity and it doesn't mean that it's a bad thing, like that it's going to become truly, you know, metastatic or cause death or spread to other locations. And so our study supported that as the bottom line, that sentinel node and the utility of sentinel node, even in spitzoid melanoma, our study did not support that it should be done. Oh, the other conclusion that I didn't state before. One thing that was also helpful is that specifically with regard to staining in ancillary studies, there's no set defining features for like diagnostic criteria for atypical spitzoid tumors or spitzoid melanomas. And so it showed, some of our data showed that there are certain stains and are certain ancillary tests that can be helpful in diagnosis.
Yeah, so what I'm hearing here is there's some really great information that you are able to glean that has some very real implications for the clinic and for patients. So,
and that's where I'm very motivated for research in general. Like, I consider myself a clinician and not a researcher, but now here I am in research. And that was really the motivating factor, is like, how are we going to affect outcomes for patients and their families? How can we improve things? How can we make it the best that it possibly can be?
Like, let's say your past publication, a patient walks into your clinic and you're having this conversation. What are you telling them? Based on what I learned through this study, here's what we now know.
I actually did just have a patient the other day that inquired about the follow-up on this study and what was kind of going on. And what I could tell them was exactly kind of what I just told you, that there were not any deaths, which is fantastic. And it shows that what we are doing seems to be sufficient in treatment. Unfortunately for this patient, they had gotten a sentinel lymph node done, which was, you know, the standard of, it makes sense. You follow the melanoma guidelines based on what we know. And so I did talk with the family. I said, well, now based on some of this research, at least just based on this study, I mean, that maybe I would have guided you against doing that. But it, you know, at this point, you went with the best information that we possibly had at that point in time. And that's why we do research, is so that we can keep advancing the field.
So going through this study process, what did you have to navigate with your institution? Did you have to have IRB for this study? How did it work navigating some of those things that as a PI or a co-PI, maybe you're not equipped to deal with yet? Like, you're just starting out. So how did you navigate through some of those things?
Yeah, you know, IRB can always be a little bit challenging, a little bit daunting. We have a good research support specialist within our department who helps out with some of that, the IRB submissions, and I think that's super important. But actually, I just had a resident who was really savvy and had worked with the IRB before, and she kind of took the lead on it, and so that was very, very helpful. Both in just even submitting the initial IRB and kind of updating it as needed as the project continued to extend, which happens. And so, you know, it can definitely be daunting, but I think within a department, there's definitely a role for research support specialists to help with that kind of thing. You don't want to be tied up in an IRB if you're trying to get a study done. So, and it was required, absolutely, for our study. And so we were able to do it and just move forward with the appropriate parameters.
So where does the research go from here?
Some additional questions that I have, and I think that I get approached about quite a bit, what is, like, specifically, what surgical margins do you take on these? And so I think that that would be my next clinical question, would be, based on what we know and how we categorize these now, what surgical margins lead to specific outcomes, right? For melanoma, standard melanoma, we know very, very specifically, okay, you take this safety margin because there's this percentage that could recur, you know, based on this Breslow depth. And we don't really know that specifically for these types of tumors yet. if those big safety margins are required. Our data kind of suggests that bigger margins would need to be taken for a spitzoid melanoma than for any typical spitz tumor, based on higher recurrence rates for spitzoid melanomas. But there was a lot of variability in the margins taken and also with recurrence. So I feel like we need a bigger sample size to determine those nuances at this point, and really maybe hone in on some of those specific clinical questions.
There's always more to be done, right? And
always.
Every time a project starts, you think of, like you said earlier, questions that you're asking now along the way, like, oh, if we'd included that question.
Yeah.
But that's how research happens, right?
Right. That's the exciting stuff. It inspires more research.
Exactly.
I think we need more outcome studies at this point, you know, in terms of, interventions that were taken and outcomes. I definitely think that our data also suggests that while immunohistochemical staining is helpful, and there are certain ones that seem to be more helpful than others, determining how aggressive they are and what category they fall into, certainly it seems like we're trending more towards next generation sequencing for most of these tumors. So fortunately, there are some prospective studies being done by our wonderful Dr. Sargent at the NIH, Mike Sargent. And so that's going to be probably the way of the future for most of these tumors.
So a lot of interesting research to be had and much more to come.
That's right.
Very wonderful. Well, thank you so much for joining me on Getting to Know Your Research, Dr. Barebi. It's always a pleasure speaking with you. And thank you so much for all of your work and contributions to the field. And let us know when it's published. We can't wait to read it.
Absolutely. And thank you so much again for having me. I always love coming and talking with you, Jen. And I'm also excited to see this in publication, hopefully sometime soon. So we'll certainly keep you posted.
Thank you so much to Dr. Barebi for joining me on Getting to Know Your Research today. If you'd like to learn more about this project, or if you'd like to listen to the Points of Discussion podcast about Spitz nevi, please click the links in the show notes. Please make sure you're following Pedra on social media at Pedra Research, and make sure you have subscribed to the Pedra Pearls podcast channel so you never miss an episode. Thanks for listening.